Hey, State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is back for a Tacky Talk. It's been a while, Tacky. How are you?
Hey Joe, we've had some scheduling challenges the last week, and regretfully, we are going to have to make up for lost time today, I guess. So people listening may have to listen to this different kind of speed rambling.
What these roaming thoughts that just kind of come in and out of our minds, exactly. You had some time off, did you?
Some time off in August, September. We actually, we talked about a little bit of that when we were last on. But no, I was actually very proud to receive a couple awards in the past 2 weeks. I received the Automobile Association of Service Providers, ASP, which are the organization that represents car repair folks. And they recognized me as one of the legislative champions. And actually was with the International Association of Plumbers and Machine Operators and received the Legislative of the Year award. I didn't realize that organization was 99 years old in 2025. So it was actually quite an honor. I actually had to leave the state. I kind of mentioned that a little bit. I actually had to leave the state to go to Palm Springs, California to receive my award, which sadly, I couldn't go to Chowder Fest in the next. So I apologize for that. It was a wonderful weather, perfect time. But someone recognizes you, and I got the notice about 3 months ago. I do think it's kind of important to show up.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations on those. That's great. Very good.
Yeah, it was quite a thrill, and we had a good conversation about water and plumbing, and it was kind of funny that my speech came up. I received a recipient and I gave a speech after folks they recognized who are doing clean water projects in the Philippines and folks that are helping out with heat hot water in Navajo Nation. So, while it is an honor to become Legislator of the Year, it seems very minor when you look at other people doing real work out there to make quality of life significantly better for folks at an individual level. I mean, clean water and good drainage and sewage is essential for good health, good infrastructure, and good progress.
Yeah, it often gets overlooked because at least this part of the country, it's plentiful and abundant and reliable.
Yeah, it is very much taken for granted, particularly here, those of us in NWA districts, very much take for granted the clean water and the water safety, as well as the good drainage and sewage we have in the area. I know we live in a flood zone in Quincy and coastal areas, but for the most part, the cities and the towns and the state, do a fairly good job of trying to keep the water moving, unless you run across a 50-year storm or a major blizzard or something like that, that they'll gum up the drainage systems. But also, I mean, you don't hear often about a sewage line break in Massachusetts. And I know we're back in a drought situation. It's kind of ironic considering how wet the summer has been. But I remember where there's some drought, but the well water management in many communities is pretty good. And you have local reservoirs everywhere. But people forget that most of the world is still struggling with portable water that meets standards in Massachusetts. And the United States is like 99 plus percent. I mean, it's never quite perfect, as we saw in, was it Bedford, in the water problem there with the water company? Was it Boxford? Was it Boxford? I think it was Boxford.
Oh, yes, right, yes.
Boxford about the,
Oxford, I think, yeah.
and the water, private water company doing a poor job in keeping the water flowing. I mean, but 99 point plus, it's clean and reliable water in the United States, which many countries can't attribute to it. And those of you who traveled internationally know that tap water is not safe in many, I call it two plus nations, even countries that aren't just about first world, but just on the edge.
Yeah.
They look remarkably like first world cities, but there's still some things like portable water just keeps them from becoming a first world nation.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Curious, at either one of those associations, did the subject of tariffs come up at all and how they're impacting their industries, Jackie?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, the car repair folks obviously are impacted by tariffs because a lot of parts are made in Canada,
Right.
not necessarily overseas. The other group, the IAPMO, their stuff is actually different. What they do is they're actually not necessarily just working on information sharing and regulation unification, not just in the United States, but globally, and the unification says conformity. So everyone's working on the same standards. And the standards are very high for clean water in particular. They actually have testing facilities in many countries that manufacture plumbing parts. And they actually will test and find out if there's any toxic metals in there, whether they're structurally not sound, and whether to make code in the different parts of the United States. A plumbing code is slightly different in each of the 50 states. About 25 states have a really common or near identical code, but the most states have their, or half the states have their own. But the organization's mission is to ensure that when you get a plumbing fixture, that that fixture is subject to United States safety standards and code of the state you're in. So, for example, I didn't realize they had a plant in Shanghai. Its sole purpose is before export of plumbing products is fully tested and confirmed to be safe for you, for United States use, a huge consumer issue, right? They also have been building plants in places like Indonesia, another place that is building facilities, they're building testing plants there. And some countries actually welcome them in because they set the standard. However, just because they're there doesn't mean that that country is going to be subject to U.S. plumbing standards. So it's a bit of an interesting situation. And for example, Amazon products, they actually went on to test a lot of Amazon products, discover large quantities of deficient products, which eventually Amazon took off their product line when they discovered that it's a danger to the public to actually sell them.
Interesting. Yeah, something you never would have even thought about, right? But something certainly to be aware of, and use your reputable local plumbing supply companies, really.
Yeah, and the funny thing about the engineers, like they say, you should come visit one. They're like, you want me to come visit one at some point down the road, because it also involves destroying them, like structural testing. So, they actually destroy a lot of plumbing equipment and pipe fitting equipment because of the, well, plumbing, pretty much plumbing. But, they want to see if it holds up to U.S. standards. And that's why they want to actually actively promote in other countries to, bring up the standards to U.S. standard levels. And things like continuing education, sharing information, exporting information to do that. So I didn't realize how large this organization was to actually went down and talk to these folks. And it's also union and non-union and contractors and developers. I mean, it's not a niche in like one specific sector, given how construction works globally, not just locally. It's a uniform effort from a lot of different organizations who understand the importance safety of drainage, sewage, and clean water.
Yeah, it is. It's critical for development. I mean, as we saw that, the speaker recently talked about expanding the MWRA district down the South Coast here in Massachusetts to help spur development.
Yeah, the MWRA actually has managed the water so well that even during drought periods, they still have an abundance of water. And then all of us, believe it or not, are doing water conservation. If you're a newly built home or recently built home, most likely you do have faucets that that have what do you call it, water, reduced water consumption. A lot of new toilets have water consumption reduction. So combination of make good water management and consumers at home, reducing consumption or using efficiency consumption. Creates extra water. And speakers interested in economic development south of Quincy, and the things you need to have for economic development or housing is three things, four really. It's water, sewage, energy, or generally electricity, believe it or not, that includes things like natural gas. So it's a you can't do any economic development without power, water, and sewage. You need those three things.
Right, some kind of transportation link as well. The South Coast commuter rail is a good example of that.
And getting from place to place, but you
Right.
can't build of the first, well, the first three.
Yeah.
And that's part of Western Mass. I mean, I know we're in the greater Boston, eastern part of the state, but we don't think about anything west of Worcester. And some of us don't believe anything past 128. Or in my case, probably past Cambridge. But
Well, you went across the country, Jackie. You really got out
that
there.
is like a big achievement for me. To go that far out, believe it or not. It's actually half a joke, actually.
Who's this Quincy kid?
There's some of that. When you show up with the Boston accent, it does kind of make people think twice. And I do suppress the accent when I'm talking to people, but when I kind of relax, it comes all out to talk to you.
Same with me. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, for example, like they don't have enough natural gas in the west part of the state. My knowledge is that they still have trouble keeping the backup storage tanks of gas, natural gas, full, and without a another natural gas pipeline coming down there in the next 20 odd years, and this will be no new development in the western part of the state. And the advocates have done a successful job, preventing new pipeline construction, and that means you're gonna have to truck gas or propane from basically Everett to Western Mass, which is environmentally unacceptable in the long term because it's actually environmentally better to have pipe gas than it is to have transport gas by truck. It just the logic is very obvious on that, I hope. So again, economic revolves those things. If we're a developing nation, clean water, clean sewage leads to good public health. It's been proven for centuries that they have clean water and ability to move sewage safely out of an urban area, and the rural areas, any kind of community. It improves public health dramatically.
Yeah. So with the new gas pipelines now, were those the pipelines that the governor was opposed to coming from down from Maine?
It was like through New Hampshire, Vermont, and then crosses over into northern. It's like right in New Hampshire border.
Okay.
Come down from because that part of the state, western part of the state, does not receive natural gas from the south. It comes from the north.
Right.
So, us in Quincy, we used the Wanaka line, which some of you may remember in the old days, the Tennessee line, that comes in through Connecticut and then it feeds everything, in the greater Boston, Worcester area via Connecticut.
I
And
see.
since, and with the end of the line, you'd end of the line, you pay the most because we're at the end of the line. So, going the other way in Western Mass is one of the problem. And economic development in Western Mass is very different challenges does in greater Boston area.
Yeah.
Not just, gas, but also aging power structure, different type of road system, no public transportation that's as robust as major cities. And then, quality of life is different out there too. I mean, we're blessed in, cities to be able to get your kids to school relatively close. Those who are listening, it doesn't come from Quincy or Boston or Weymouth or Braintree, eastern part of state. You have regional school district, which means
Right.
you're waiting for a regional school bus because it's too small a community to support its own school. So, and those of us that live and grew up in this area, to kind of take it for granted, but it's how we live here is not how everyone lives, and I think that's the thing people must think about that don't get enough exposure or don't move to other areas. Don't realize that everyone's life is different depending where they are, and subject largely to geography, subject to availability of water, sewer, and power.
Yeah, it's much more rural, a lot more private water wells out that part of the state. Yeah, regional school districts, some kids may start their day at like 6 in the morning getting on the bus, you know?
Or even earlier, right? I
Yeah.
mean, the closest thing we have is the Norfolk Aggie Agriculture School, which kids in Quincy go to, but you have to wake up very early or catch the bus or arrange some kind of transport. And those of a private school, like myself, went to BC High. We were too close to the school because of the MBTA to actually be able to have bus, use the bus. So either you had your parents drive, you drive, or you got, taken to the Red Line. And I'm just old enough before our JFK station was built. So you had to go into Ashmont and flip back over
Yeah.
onto the other line. So those of us, like I said, went to BC High, went to private school, so it was a different transport issue. So again, all I'm saying is that we take for granted a lot of things in life, and I'm not one of those folks that do that. And as I get older, and when I actually do leave the state, it gives me a different view of how things the world works. And things aren't bad overall. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's not bad. And when I was in Palm Springs, at the hotel, one of the things they had was a little sign up saying from the Desert Water Authority that your water's going to come out cloudy, but it's perfectly safe.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I took a video of it changing from cloudy to clear over a course of a minute in my cup. It's like 99.4. It's a mineral spring. The problem with some of these desert areas, the well water is mineral driven. So there's a lot of naturally occurring minerals, particularly salts, that is filtered out. And then if you like mineral water, welcome to how mineral you get your mineral water. You have purified water from the more dangerous parts and leave behind the mineral components that won't kill you.
Interesting. Does it taste different?
little saltier. I mean,
Yeah.
if you ever been in a desert environment, I mean, sometimes a little bit of a salt taste of water. It's not like gonna kill you. Definitely not. It's just that it's, not the same as living here, where the water is pretty good, unless you have, municipal pipes that, have some problems. But, a lot of people have water filters in their homes, or they have a Brita filter in the house. And believe it or not, a lot of people drink more bottled water than ever, which I still find baffling given the fact that, we live in the MWA district, and the amount of per ounce you spend on bottled water is probably higher than you would be opening your tap.
Right. Yeah, not to mention the plastic bottle problem that goes with that.
And we keep talking about microplastics entering your body, but you see people breaking a bottle of water. And then if you use a metal container for water, not all metal containers are 100% metal, but the interior of many containers is actually a coat of some type of plastic to prevent rusting. So unless you have a very costly product, metal product that is rust resistant, probably made of aluminum, but then again, it's not very tough if it's aluminum. You need to have some more alloy in there. There's all kinds of plastic coating on your water bottle, so you may not realize.
Yeah. Speaking of natural gas, I'm sure you heard the governor's comments about Eversource's rate hike proposal. It made me wonder, how much control does the state have over the DPU, which has to approve that?
Well, I mean, this DPU is the state, and I've always made the argument that the DPU being under environmental affairs makes it more political than consumer. And it used to be in the old days under the Secretary of Administration and Finance under the Office of Consumer Affairs, where it had more quasi-public independence. I mean, it was much more quasi-independent because it was more adjudicatory, and it was done mostly by data, not by politics. There's always a little bit of politics, but I mean, it was really more like data-driven, evidentiary-driven, and arguments between the entities. Now, this is still a deregulated state, and natural gas is one of those bizarre ones already been kind of deregulated on its own, where the transmission distribution lines are paid by you as part of transmission distribution charge, and natural gas is somewhat subject to the market rate, depending on amount of consumption and availability time of year. The gas companies do buy from the distribution, the local gas companies buy from the transmission folks, a fixed rate on bid. But I mean, if there's a consumption shortage and they hit peak and it becomes a real like market driven component.
Right. Supply
So
and demand, right? Yeah.
yeah, the biggest part of distribution, your local distribution for both gas and electric is really maintaining the infrastructure, namely the pipes and the wires.
Right.
And how they prioritize. So obviously, any legislator and any local official knows you're going to get a call about spilling natural gas is just part of the job. And the question is how efficient are they in the capital projects rotating out those pipes? And whether or not they're, moving from cast iron, or alloyed iron to plastic. What are your priorities? So that was actually a listing of priorities of one, two, three. One is critical failure, and then three is monitoring. And then two is like, we'll get to it if hopefully it doesn't become a one. So I know it sounds weird, but that's basically how it works. It's a three-tier system. And if you're, when I remember one time we had old Liberty Gas, which you guys know is Columbia, which blew up part of Andover. Was it Andover? Where was it?
Somewhere on the North Shores, it was
Yeah.
tragic. A young man got killed, as I recall.
Yeah, his chimney fell on him from the hose.
Yes, that's right.
So, they were problem was that when it was at the DPU, I mean at the DPU AG's office many moons ago now, they decided to replace all their pipes with plastic, which you all think, oh, makes perfect sense. The problem is that when they do things like that, it actually ignores the number one leaks.
Interesting.
So
Okay.
replacing good pipe with new pipe, well, old pipe is falling apart and creates a
Okay.
huge capital project problem or prioritization, as well as a cost to do repairs.
Right.
So, people always like, well, just change everything. Changing everything is very expensive.
I would think, yeah.
And there's a rate of return to the company because you're basically borrowing money against the company to do whether rate to recover against you in rates, somewhere between 9.5 and 10.5%, depending on the rate mechanism that's been approved by the DPU. So, this is, as you can tell, pretty intricate in terms of cost recovery for the company because your ratepayers literally borrow money from the company for these capital projects,
Yeah.
and the ratepayers pay back the company.
Right. Yeah. It makes me wonder if these companies should be not private companies, should be a public utility.
Well, part of well, it wouldn't change the problem.
Yeah, true.
The only difference, you don't have to deal with a rate of return. But then again, the rate of return includes them paying the interest on debt.
Yeah, but it would spread the cost out over the entire state.
It could,
Yeah.
but I mean, you're only two companies, right? You only have National Grid and Eversource left. So
Right.
they control the whole state anyway. I mean, when there's more smaller companies, those I remember the legacy companies, when there was like over a dozen of them.
Yes, Boston Gas, Boston Edison. Yeah.
Yeah, there was also hype because it was smaller. They could hyper focus on the small geographic zones
Yes.
and get ahead of the issue. Now they're so big, you have the opposite problem.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All
It's
right.
hard to get ahead of it when you're too large. And that's essentially what's happened. So we had smaller utility companies. They could get ahead of it because they were smaller, they were nimble, the geography was easier to deal with.
Yeah. That's like Braintree Electric Light, right? They're self-contained, so they can deal with anything right immediately.
Yeah, they control the lines and the poles. So
Right.
actually they share some of the poles with Verizon,
Yeah.
but I mean some of them. So they can pivot quicker and they can keep with the infrastructure faster and spread out the cost much more equitably for the ratepayers because you spread it out. Now there's no shareholders, so there's no rate of return, but you still have to pay interest and the debt service is timely. Their energy is actually, since they don't generate energy, the Municipal Light Plant Braintree actually puts it out to bid. But people don't realize the Minnesota Light Plant doesn't have to pay for energy efficiency costs. They don't have to pay the low income costs. They don't have to pay credits for renewable energy credits. They don't have to pay credits for solar credits. So, the two big public utilities, has state mandates regarding part of your distribution charge. The Municipal Light Plants are not required to carry those charges. They voluntarily do it, which some do. Some do an energy efficiency charge on their distribution rate because it helps fund the local energy efficiency programs because they don't qualify for MassSAFE.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
So, yeah, I know it's a little, again, it's as more I talk about it, and hopefully people are probably rolling their eyes at this point. It's, yeah, this is really deep into the weeds of stuff I like.
Yeah, but it's interesting because it has a direct impact on how much you pay.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
There's only so much we can control. It's hard to control the market rate for natural gas because of the nature of supply and demand. We
Right,
saw
but you can
it.
control the state mandates.
Yeah, we control the state mandates, and that's something that really needs to be reviewed.
Yeah.
And the governor had pointed out with Rebecca Tupper, the Secretary of Environment and Energy, what action they're going to take on that regarding putting a case before DPU or changing the statutory construction is a good question, right? We talk about energy efficiency, $4.5 billion of I don't know what they're doing with that money.
We've
Lot
talked about this
of,
before, yeah.
yeah, we talked about this before. It just got out of control, and we have three different solar credits, which I really wasn't happy with. They argued when I was on the Telecom Utilities and Energy Committee when I was just a committee member. I was arguing against those credits because I couldn't find a demonstration of a rate of return that makes sense for consumers, nor does it actually good return for clean energy. But even more that, the rates that the consumer, the I'm sorry, the solar credits never went down in valuation. Generally, when you have enough flood in the market, the credit valuation goes down, and that actually helps ratepayers.
Right.
Renewable energy credits, because it's a United States market, every state has one in some form. It actually brought down the price of energy credits significantly because of volume. Solar credits did not follow that route, and now we had three different mechanisms of which the first one's been phased out. So, I mean, what I'm getting at is that you don't know till you do it to see what happens, and sometimes it doesn't work out the way you want. This is called life. At the same time, though, the state really needs to, meaning the legislature and the governor and the DPU, really needs to reevaluate the efficiency of some of these programs that have been around for like 40 years.
Yes, absolutely. Speaking of rates, since last we talked, the Fed cut the rate quarter point.
It was expected. We talked about the whole Bureau of Labor Statistics last time and how the data is
Yep.
delayed and why it's delayed and how private companies don't really like to share the information timely because they don't want people to know what's really going on in an employment issue, and how people have really unrealistic expectations because they think it's like the government sitting in your doorstep inside your employer looking at those counts. I mean, it doesn't, you all know that isn't how that works. I mean, people just need to think for half a blink and realize that this is a lot more intricate regarding data collection. So the job market's weaker, unemployment ticked up a teeny hair. Inflation ticked up a little bit. I expect the PCE this Friday will probably be meeting expectation because they're already anticipating the tick up. So I don't think it should be not beat estimates on the Thursday and Friday and on the PCE numbers and the other manufacturing numbers. But consumer confidence is really down. Again, after all these spikes back during the summer, it was up. So it's real mixed messages from consumer surveys. So the Fed Reserve cut by 0.25%. So the Fed rate's between 4 and 4.25. What does that mean to you? Well, your credit card short-term borrowing's down by 0.25 in many cases. The loans between banks among themselves and the Fed Reserve, particularly because banks borrow money from the Fed Reserve, has been dropped by 0.25. Your short-term loans, again, anything less than 2 years, is down probably 0.25. And if you're a business that lives in a line of credit, including the state, those interest rates drop by 2.25. Does it mean a lot in the big picture? No, because the loan rates are controlled by the market, the mortgage rates are controlled by the market. Anything 2 years and above, in particular, 10-year rate, 20 and 30 is what people look at, but the 10-year, two-year, 10-year, and 30-year are the benchmarks people look at. And hopefully, what this does is increases stability for particularly lines of credit and smaller businesses to be able to get a more affordable line of credit to try to keep people paid and employed. There's also some weird issue regarding the fact that the job market is weak, but it's also a lot more people in employment longer. And secondly, there is not a lot of new jobs still because unemployment is low, which means the hiring is slowing down. And this is a lesson from 2008 financial crisis. There was an enormous amount of hiring and a whole lot of firing in a very short time period. And businesses don't like to do two things. They don't like to pay people that aren't going to be there any longer. And two, they don't want to pay more unemployment insurance. So once you start laying off people, your unemployment insurance goes up because, well, you're unemployed, made them unemployed. And it's two bad scenarios, right? If you're paying people for 6 months, then you have to fire them in 6 months, and then that's basically lost money.
It's a failed investment, basically. No return on your investment.
Yeah, so hiring like it was after the post-financial crisis was very cautious. And when they're back to that same period now, we're having a very cautious hire in a very unstable economic environment where the macroeconomics and the Main Street economics don't seem to be syncing up again. And everything is just unclear where we're heading. And again, some stuff is one time, the tariffs are one time cost, but it's still a cost. And then we don't know what the federal government's going to do about all the other things that actually are part of economic stimulus. For example, the ending of the windmill permitting, is going to cost, thousands and thousands of jobs, right? We talk about the Hyundai situation where they made a big reality TV show deporting 300, 400, particularly Korean nationals, of which it said before earlier, 80,000, 87,000 professional visas are available a year for workers of that level of skills. And they could have done this through a conversation with the company and the Korean government on, a transition of these folks back to their home country and try to work out an arrangement of how to deal with the visa issue, as opposed to making a big show on it. So foreign investment's going to be down, and tourism is horrific. I know it's only point, it's only 3% of country's GDP, but different regions matter. And India's travel to U.S. has been down 15%. Europe's down. China doesn't want to come over. And now with this most recent incident with Hyundai, good luck seeing Koreans coming now.
And Canada, I know, has already pulled back. That's affecting Boston.
Yeah, it's like 50%. Boston, and when you get to the wintertime, Florida.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, all the southern states are very popular for Canada. And also it's going to affect real estate because Canadians are actually a big buyer of summer winter homes.
They want to get out of the snow in the winter up there.
I've been in Toronto in February 1 year. It's much better down here than it is in Toronto in February. I tell you that much. I've done it
We
four
don't really know what
times.
winters are compared to Canada.
No, it's very different when in Canada. I've done it a few times as and not interested in doing it more than I have to. But yeah, I mean, there's gonna be the ripple effect is gonna be felt. It's just that you may not feel it here. And we talk about cutting government programs, particularly Medicaid, food stamps, and what's going into VA and other things. But I was talking to a friend about this yesterday, right? I mean, it doesn't feel like you cut. Well, it doesn't feel like you're cutting something until it affects you. So you don't feel it. It doesn't mean something didn't happen. It just doesn't affect you. And yet, well, some people may never, depending where you're in the income bracket, right?
Oh, true.
And
Yeah, that's true.
And then some folks, I say, people don't, want to cut government apart because they think it's bloated and wasteful. Fine, until you need something. And unless you're inside a very specific income bracket, most of us are going to need government for something at some point.
Yeah. And it also, the cut does impact savings too for folks who are trying to earn some interest.
Or the bond rate's gone down to short-term bonds. If you've been playing the short-term bond ladders or money market funds, then you're going to see a little bit smaller returning interest.
Right.
But again, I said before, and I've said multiple times, entirely up to you to decide how you want to get interest savings on CDs, bonds, and your savings and checking accounts. And not to throw criticism, but it is still very competitive out there if you're willing to go to another bank, and it is FDIC insured bank. Make sure that's the case. And if you use a brokerage firm, they do have a similar thing to FID insurance. Not an investment, only the money that's in the savings, folks. Not in investments. Investments are your problem.
Right.
So, I'm not again advising people what to do, but if you look at your bank statement and you look at the interest return, and you're still going to get between 3.75 to 4.25 in another bank, I mean, it's your decision how to manage it. The terminal rate, meaning the rate where the Federal Reserve is going to stop lowering, people speculate between 3 and 3.25. Speculation is going to try to reduce rates two more times, 0.25 again. But it's going to be subject to how the economy goes. If, earnings reports for corporations aren't good, if consumers stop spending, if the unemployment continues to go up, or it's very clear no one's hiring anymore for a long period. Well, it may stimulate the Fed Reserve to try to encourage more people to, unfortunately, use their credit cards to buy, and also encourage more business to get more lines of credit to keep people employed. It's a very delicate act because you're doing a big macro thing, but it's still up to individual people and individual businesses of how they respond.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very intricate, tangled web. It's not one size fits all.
Well, I think, the president oversimplifies it, and I think the public doesn't appreciate the complexity of it because, again, and unless you're in it, how would you know? And half the economy is driven by Main Street businesses, which the Fed rate will help or hurt depending on the lines of credit they're operating under short-term borrowing. So, I mean, so did our Silicon Valley Bank. I mean, the entire bank was driven by short-term borrowing, and became unsustainable at one point when people panicked and created rumor created a bank rush, and the bank rush killed the bank. So, I think there's an oversimplification. It's like talk about this before, right? Regarding exporting U.S. product, when the U.S. dollar is very strong, it's hard to export product because other countries don't have enough money. Conversely, the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency. It's better than gold because it's more trustworthy. But if you reduce its value too much, the trust of doing commerce with the U.S. becomes problematic because people can't trust our money. They don't trust us. So yeah, it's like they always say this all the time with the Trump administration. Well, people won't buy stuff because it's too expensive. Yeah, but lowering our currency valuation doesn't automatically mean they're going to buy our stuff. You still have to like sell stuff people want. You have to have a country that can actually afford it still, because even the U.S. dollar is weaker, that country may be too poor to have it. And this is the whole thing about tariffs as well, right? If you're a poor country, you're not going to buy U.S. products because you can't afford it. And of course, there's also domestic competition. Brand name matters, right? People drink Coca-Cola or Pepsi, none the twain shall meet, if people think, right? And people are very loyal to local product. Coffee, for example, and I'll use coffee as a favorite example in China, which is now very competitive, just like the US, regarding small business coffee shops. Places like Starbucks having a hard time, right? Starbucks has a hard time here because Dunkin's actually murders almost everybody else around them on a chain. Peet's Coffee has like no penetration. They have a very hard time getting to the state because of Dunkin's, because we're very loyal to local brand, right? So let's say you decide to, try to have Massachusetts people buy Starbucks or Peet's, but how would you do it? You raise tariffs on Peet's and Starbucks to try to compete. What do you do? Change the dollar valuation of Washington State so pizza is now cheaper than cheaper, but would you pay 25% less for pizza or Starbucks, but you've been a dedicated Dunkies guy for like your entire life?
Well, the market will drive it, right?
Yeah, but consumers have preferences.
Oh, for sure. No question. Yeah, and companies know that.
They're loyal. I mean, as long as you don't change the as long as you don't change the formula for Coca-Cola, they're still gonna stay. Those of us old enough knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, yes. I remember the whole debacle of the trying to change the recipe years ago, then the new Coke, right? Then they had the new old Coke.
Yeah. Do you remember it was New Coke then Classic Coke?
That's
Then
right.
New Coke quietly vanished, and there was only.
That goes down in the Oops Hall of Fame.
Again, consumers have preferences, and you have a preference. And believe me, someone in another country has their preference too. So people
And
are going to
consumers
understand.
have power too, to dictate that.
Oh, absolutely. Right. And I think people oversimplify the global economy at the macro level because it's all driven by individual decisions. And it's in countries the same way.
What is coming up at the State House, Techie?
Well, we just passed a bill in the House and Senate. It went to the governor. I think it's $234 million appropriation from various healthcare trust funds. That's where the money
Oh, yes.
came from. The money is actually giving us one more shot at trying to get Medicaid reimbursement for our local hospitals and community health centers inside the state prior to the start of the fiscal year, October 1, which is the start of the federal fiscal year. So the big beautiful thing they passed in Washington, D.C. changes the Medicare reimbursement rates for all states. That affects community hospitals as well as, I'm sorry, community hospitals, private hospitals, as well as community health centers.
Right.
The state is a 50% match. So, you spend, we spend 50 cents, we spend a buck, that, we cover 50% of that buck, so 50 cents from the feds. So, but there's going to be massive formula change, including. How do I wouldn't say deceptive at all, but various types of legal, what will no longer be legal, accounting mechanisms and reimbursement rates set up. They're taking various reimbursement formulas away, and this stuff goes into effect in the next fiscal year. So we're trying to get this money in now to get our federal match to try to buy us one more year. Before the big changes affect Medicaid. And this is actually a pretty smart move on our part. Now, whether it actually is smart in the sense that the federal government will honor us spending this money inside their fiscal year before the bill takes effect, we shall see. But I don't know about other states, but we decided to be very proactive and just like, okay, we have one more crack in the old system because we already know the new system's gonna be bad.
No idea. I read that, and I read that yesterday. Actually, the governor signed it yesterday. Some of the local South Shore Hospital, Brockton Hospital, Beth Israel Deaconess down in Plymouth getting some funding. So some local organizations funding too.
Yeah, that applies to Medicaid reimbursement rates. So, again, we're trying to get ahead of this. You can't predict the future. We're just trying to hedge our bets the best we can. And this actually helps taxpayers out and people receiving those services for another year. Because when the feds pull back, we're going to have to make up the differential. And we talked about this multiple times. There's no way to do it. And draconian taxes are out of the question. There's no way we're going to be able to make up.
When I talked to Lieutenant Governor, she as much admitted that no, the state can't afford that.
No, and people ask me, can you raise taxes? Yeah, it'll be draconian level taxes. We're at 5% income tax, in case you're not aware of that, plus the millionaire's tax of $1 if you're over 1 million, 4%. We're a flat tax state. We're actually not a high income tax state around the country, but if you throw in the property taxes, it does go up a lot because of the property valuation so high. But I mean, the state itself is actually a flat tax of 5%, and you got excise taxes and you got, sin taxes on alcohol and tobacco and you got sales tax. But I mean, in terms of like your income tax, we're actually pretty much like inside the middle zone in terms of the country. So, I'm not sure what's going to happen next. Again, the various advocacy groups, mass taxpayer foundations, of business-driven conservative figures on fiscal spending, not just us, but on the federal impacts. And they're projecting something area like almost $10 billion minimum of Medicare shift over the course of a decade.
Really?
Those numbers are based on assumptions that may change quickly because they're just using some what they got in preliminary numbers. So they made very clear their assumptions. These are just basic assumptions, what they know. They won't know until more information comes out. But they're not the only ones. So-called liberal and so-called conservative think tanks in the state are pretty much sounding alarms. And I suspect when we get to December, when the Ways and Means Committee does the revenue consensus hearings between the economists and the various groups, I'm going to have a hard time seeing that. Doesn't matter. I don't care where you are on the political spectrum. I have a hard time seeing that they're not going to see all the same numbers relatively similarly.
Right, exactly. Wow. It's troubling for sure.
It's a tough time to be in state government, folks. I'm telling you right now. And this is a guy that's gotten through, came to government service at the tail end of the Massachusetts miracle bust back in the 90s and the saving loan scandals, and got through the dot-com bust and got through the great financial crisis. And then, of course, we hit COVID. So I've been around for a while moving through these things. And I think one of the things that new legislators, when they come to this gig inside of a bad financial crisis scenario, they didn't realize, one, we can't deficit spend because they just think we can spend money like water. I mean, I'm dead serious, folks. New legislators, I don't care where your political party, they all believe we can spend money like water, which is not allowed in the Constitution. We're a balanced budget state. And secondly, bad news comes up immediately. I mean, nothing's worse than being a new legislator, and the first thing you do is tell people, we're cutting your funding. So, I mean, I've been around and watched this, observed this for so many years. And, being a student in this gig and on, human behavior and, how various elected officials do stuff with many, many times. So, no, it's going to be a very tough time to be in government, in all seriousness. I mean, it's going to be a tough few years in terms of not sure how things are going to play out. There's a lot of bad news to share around. It's just people going to be happy, not happy about stuff.
Right. How about in the district, Tacky? What's going on?
So far, it's not too bad. I mean, tonight there's a actually Secretary of State Bill Gavin's running for re-election. It's because he has a fundraiser tonight in Quincy at the Common Market, and then our constituent and old friend Julie Pinkham is executive director of the Massachusetts Nurse Association. She's retiring. Retirement party is this Thursday night. So congratulations on your retirement and all the great work you've done on healthcare and supporting our nurses in the state. Next week, the firefighter retirement is it 2 weeks? 2 weeks now, the firefighter retirement party's coming up. And then we have Korean Foundation Day and the Taiwanese 10-10 Day, which is 10-10 reference to the founding of modern China. We won't get into the whole Taiwan and People's Republic of China issue just yet. But both actually celebrate, the end of imperial rule, which referred to October 10th, 10-10 Day. And then the Asia Community Fund has a fundraiser coming up in October. Actually, I'm meeting the Korean consulate this week myself to discuss the whole Hyundai situation and deportation issue. They're coming in to chat about what happened and what they're going to think about doing moving forward, or at least share some ideas in that matter. This
Oh,
past
maybe we can talk about that next week. I'd be curious.
I'm curious too what they tell me. Like this past weekend was also very busy as well. I was at the Massachusetts Asian Restaurant Association on Sunday morning. Talk about restaurants. I mean, pretty straightforward, and gave a quick greetings as well. And then I last week I was on a well fireside type chat, but more of a Q&A actually. With the National Podiatrist Association. Podiatry is one of those areas that my committee actually gets bills on, although this year I think we just got one. We used to get a lot more in the past. But talk about interstate compacts, talk about how boards move around, talk about how regulations are made, things like that. So that was something I did this past Thursday. So it's been a lot of me bouncing around a lot. Lately, locally, whether it be a local Quincy event or an interest group or an organization that's looking to talk to me. And I've already started turning down stuff. I mean, I got too many events, particularly out of city events, and I'm just starting to reject them.
But did you go up in a hot air balloon at Pageant Field over the weekend, Jackie?
I don't like heights to start with. I don't like water. I don't like a lot of things as relative to me being vulnerable to falling or drowning. But I, since I live across from the marsh, you guys know I live across from Black Creek, I can see the balloons come up over the tree line in Pageant Field. So I did get, a binocular view of them actually. You actually have to physically be down there. I could observe from the edge of the marsh for
Without getting too close.
not too close, just put on again binoculars and just see it from my side. But I mean, as some people with friends sent some pictures over. It's quite a show. And again, to give the Lydia City a lot of credit for the form of celebration and doing it, right in Quincy for not just Quincy residents, but also surrounding communities that are looking for family events.
Yeah, tons still going on too. Heritage Day coming up Saturday, so all the historic sites will be open for tours, so that'll be a neat thing as well.
No, absolutely. So, definitely should take advantage of it. I mean, one of the fun things about living here is that you don't always appreciate, nor have you probably even done some of these tours. I mean, haven't done this since you were a kid. And you should actually do it and get some memories. I mean, we had the National Conference State Legislature State Party to USS Constitution. And, I was there a couple of times, particularly as a child. And the thing doesn't change, by the way, it is the Constitution. It's ship isn't exactly going to do anything new. But it was still cool because it reminds me again, I mean, it's in Charlestown. It's not like it's a big hall. But I mean, these are things that we have that we don't sometimes take advantage of because we're so close to it.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Absolutely. And the best way to do it that I found is bring somebody that's never seen it before, because it makes you look at it again in a whole new perspective.
Yeah, provided people want to come visit us.
Yeah. Well, pay them. They'll come.
Convince your family from outside the country to come and spend money here.
Exactly. Just bribe them if you have to. Just get them here.
Just get them here somehow. We need tourist dollars.
Oh boy. Time to let us know how to get a hold of you, Tacky.
Sure. Room 42 at the State House. We are staffed. We're happy to see folks that come and see us. 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. I've been receiving basically one unemployment case every 2 days now. You got things like that are happening in your life, please call us. And if you don't get somebody, leave a message telling us how to get back to you. We do not have caller ID. So again, cell phones have changed how we see numbers. So definitely call us, leave us a number and how to get in touch with you. And we will do that. Taki.chan@emailhouse.gov. Taki.chan@emailhouse.gov is my email. As we're closing in on three hearings in October and the December 4th reporting deadline with an extension possibility, I'm getting drowning now on testimony, but definitely please don't feel like you can't email me. I'll definitely see your email. But again, 617-722-2370. If it's something critically important, please give us a call. We have State Representative Taki Chan Facebook. It is shows where I'm coming and going, and we have Instagram that goes with it now. We've pretty much given up on X because traffic ain't great using it. TakiChan.org is our resource website, and I always encourage people to use MALegislature.gov because you don't need me. You can find bills and track our public hearings and watch our sessions. And of course, reach out to Joe at QATV at QATV.org. If you got a question or concern or whatever, it's his show, so complain to him. But obviously, we do love our feedback on in any topic that may have touched or you may want us to touch. It's up to Joe to decide those questions to be asked.
Yeah, we don't know everything. Definitely let us know.
Yeah, and maybe you can have Joe teach or something because I won't know the questions till he tells me anyway, because this is always a rambling speed round.
That's right. We don't pre-plan this, folks.
No, we don't. If you haven't noticed that after listening to us for 5 years, I don't know what will.
It's not scripted by any means. Thanks a lot, Jackie.
Care, Joe. See you next week.